You're listening to the Locked In Podcast. Here's your host, Algernon Cash.
I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Yes, we are in the middle of a very, very important election cycle. It is the 2022 midterm election season. So many people unaware right now that there's an election going on. I'm very shocked right now. And need my audience to know, yes, we are in the middle of a very important election. I went out to vote early the other day. They told me I was one of the very few people that had came to vote. So we need to step up and do a lot better. We need to get out and vote early. We've got a lot of important elections happening all up and down the ballot, not just at the top of the ballot with the U.S. Senate race, but all the way down to some county commissioner and school board races, especially here in Forsyth County, that we need to be paying attention to. And I've got our North Carolina Lieutenant Governor joining us with us today. He's here to sort of weigh in on the United States Senate race, as well as we've got some other questions we're going to direct his way. But Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is locking in. Lieutenant Governor, how are you today? Thank you for locking in.
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Welcome back. You know, we had you on as candidate Mark Robinson. Now you are Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Although I've said congratulations privately and publicly, but want to say it here on the show, congratulations on being the first African-American to be elected to that office. I guess let's start there. It's been a couple of years. How's it going so far in Raleigh?
It's going great. We've been able to do a lot of wonderful things. We have a wonderful team around us. We made a huge impact, particularly in the area of education. Want to continue to work on some of those things. We've made great contacts with folks all across the state for some things that we want to work on for our economy moving forward. Making great contacts, making a great impact. And like I said, moving forward in this office to try to continue to help North Carolina stay great and make her even greater in the future.
You know, Lieutenant Governor, I keep up with you and have had the opportunity to meet with you privately. And I really enjoyed the time I was able to spend with you. You're very active. You're all across North Carolina. You spend a lot of time talking to voters. You spend a lot of time out at the conventions and shaking hands and really talking to voters. When you're out there right now, what's the number one concern that you're hearing from North Carolina voters?
The two top concerns right now are our economy and education. Those are the absolute top concerns. The economy, of course, is always number one. People are concerned about their jobs. They're concerned about gas prices. They're concerned about inflation. They're concerned about this looming crisis that may be on the horizon with our supply chains, particularly when it concerns food. And they're concerned about what their children are learning in schools and what their children are not learning in schools. So those are absolutely the top issues that we're dealing with right now that people expressed to us.
Yeah, and I tell you, the inflation issue is a big one right now, and really probably something that really can only be solved at a federal level, because a lot of it's being driven by supply chain disruption and rising energy costs, and just feels like it's rising costs everywhere you turn. You recently weighed in on the United States Senate race. A lot of people paying attention to that race right now. We've got a primary happening on May 17th. You endorsed U.S. Congressman Ted Budd for the U.S. Senate race. What drove that decision?
Well, you know, we're great friends with all three of those top three candidates, McCrory, Bud, Walker. Great friends with all of them. Absolutely great friends with Mark Walker. But, you know, this race, in political terms, this race has come down to a two-way race between Bud and McCrory. And we feel like Bud is a far better candidate. Again, I like Pat McCrory. I love him. I think he's a great guy. He did some great things when he was governor. But I just feel like Congressman Bud is far more conservative and will make a far better contrast to the Democratic challenger come November. And so we have thrown our support behind Congressman Bud and certainly hope that he comes out of that primary. And then once he comes out of that primary as the winner, we're going to stand strong to make sure he beats his Democratic challenger, because, again, we think he stands in sharp contrast to her. And so we're going to make sure that he wins that general as well.
Yeah, Congressman Ted Budd, he's a good guy. He's been on the show here a couple of times. I'm actually personal friends with Ted. He and I did the North Carolina Institute for Public Trust, Frank Hill's group. We did that at Wake Forest together. That's actually where I first met Ted. And over some late night dinners at Village Tavern, he started telling me how he was going to become a U.S. congressman. And lo and behold, he went on to do so. You mentioned Congressman Walker, who I also know. He's here in the central part of the state in our mm-hmm. backyard, also a personal friend of mine. You guys are really, really close. I see you guys on Instagram. I see you on Facebook. I had him on the show here last week. He obviously expressed some disappointment that he didn't earn your endorsement. But he also really took aim at the Budd strategy around how he's ran his strategy, not appearing for debates, mm-hmm. you know, not really coming out and defending his ideas against McCrory and Walker. I mean, you're somebody that really likes to mix it up. I mean, you get out, mm-hmm. you're very clear about how you feel. You're very strong about your convictions. I mean, do you agree with how Congressman Budd's been running his campaign?
I think it works for Congressman Budd, and I think it has worked for Congressman Budd. The polls bear that out. I think his strategy, his team's strategy, suits him well. Staying back from the debates, knowing that he's full well that when he goes into those debates as the front runner, he's going to be attacked. That it's not going to be so much about the issues. It's going to be more about attacking him. So I think their strategy has worked because he's still far ahead in the polls. I think on the other hand, I don't think I could compare myself to Congressman Budd. As you said, I'm a much different person. Had it been me, of course, you know, I think I would have willingly jumped into that fray and went into those debates. But I'm sure I probably would have people who would have counseled me and said, you know, you really don't need to do that. Just stay back and take your time and save your punches for the Democratic opponent in November. And who knows? I may have taken that advice.
You know, recently you mentioned Pat McCrory a moment ago. Recently, John Hood, who's also a good friend of mine, president of John William Polk Foundation, he had mm-hmm. some real strong words about maybe some of the comments that you've been making about former Governor McCrory. I know mm-hmm. It has not been officially declared that you're running for governor, but a lot of folks believe that you are, and you seem to be moving in that direction. A lot of big announcements have been happening around North Carolina. We've got Boom coming to Greensboro. We got Toyota coming. We got VinFast coming. We've got Macy's doing a large distribution center down in Salisbury. We got Nucor making a big announcement over in Lexington. Many people would argue a lot of the things that are happening right now are rooted in the decisions that were made in the McCrory administration. You've been very, very critical of the former governor. I mean, is it what do you really think? I mean, did McCrory have a hand to do with what we're experiencing right now as a state, or was he just completely wrong for North Carolina?
I don't think so. I'll explain exactly what I mean. I think Governor McCrory did a fantastic job when he was governor. He did many, many great things. But we also can't discount the moves of the legislature. The legislature did a lot of things to set that into motion. And we have to give credit where credit is due. Much of that was in the works before Governor McCrory became Governor McCrory. And so our legislature gets a big is a big part of what happened in that movement. The main thing that I have when I'm in not supporting him to be our senator is this. He literally had the keys to the kingdom when he was in office. He had every piece that he needed. And I just don't feel like he was strong enough on education or strong enough on the judicial side. I think a lot of the things that we're dealing with now, particularly in education, are because he didn't take a strong enough stand or draw a hard enough line with the folks in education to try to get rid of some of the things that we're seeing now. And I think that process could have started then. Just as I said, our legislature started the process of turning us around economically back in 2010 when Republicans took control. That was before McCrory took office. He did a lot. McCrory did a lot to help. But I feel like he could have done much more on this, particularly on the education front. And that's one of the reasons why I don't have a problem with any of the statements that I've made and continue to stand behind those statements.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we did have some really strong legislators like Senator Berger and, certainly at the time, even Tom Tillis, who was Speaker of the House at the time, very, very strong in the legislature.
working with the North Carolina Chamber to get tax modernization done, and a number of other things that allowed the state to get moving in the right direction. You know, if you find yourself being governor, we talk about really, really important issues to North Carolina residents. There was a poll that showed up in, I believe, in Hill Magazine not too long ago that highlighted the top three issues that North Carolina voters were thinking about. One was inflation, as you talked about, economic issues. But number two was healthcare. And there are a couple of Republicans in the legislature, including Donnie Lambeth, who chairs the Ways and Means Committee, who wants to see a Medicaid expansion. I know on the Senate side, you know, Phil Berger certainly doesn't agree with it. When you become governor, if you become governor, you may be dealing with this issue. Would you support a Medicaid expansion?
As it stands right now, I would not support Medicaid expansion. I've heard some very interesting arguments for Medicaid expansion, and I love to listen to those arguments, and I would love to continue to explore those arguments. But as it stands right now, my level of trust for the federal government and what they are able to do and their commitment to keep their word and their commitment to keep their commitments, I still don't have that. I'm not confident in that. What I am confident in is the people of North Carolina. And I believe that right here in this state, there exists a number of people, intelligent people, well-versed people, people who are endowed not with the ability to imitate, but to innovate, that can bring a healthcare system that North Carolina is going to be able to surpass anything that Medicaid expansion can do. I think it's just a matter of us putting those folks together and getting it done. Because again, I'm a firm believer that in order to be innovative, you cannot imitate. Medicaid expansion is just imitation of failed policy. And I don't believe that North Carolina needs to go down that road. Again, we're going to have that conversation, and folks are going to bring those conversations to the table, and I'm willing to listen. But as it stands right now, I am not a proponent of Medicaid expansion, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, I do believe we need to address some current issues with the healthcare infrastructure. You know, always say if you want to add more cars to the road, you might want to make sure the lanes are currently big enough for the cars Absolutely. You're currently dealing with. Absolutely. So, yeah, I do think there's more to deal with it. You know, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, I'm here in the central part of the state. I'm in your backyard. I'm actually participating this year on a North Carolina Leadership Forum conversation about adequate housing. You've seen all the announcements. I mean, you've got VinFast coming, boom, Toyota. You heard me mention them before. We could see somewhere around $15 or $20 billion in private investment happening, largely right here in the central part of the state. And that's going to create a lot of high paying jobs, a lot of attention, and a lot of people wanting to move in the state. But right now, we don't currently have a place to house everybody. And I think that's probably more acute in the central part of the state than it is anywhere else. And of course, you see the issues happening in the more urban areas like Raleigh and Charlotte. If you become governor, you could become governor at a time where we're dealing with a really significant housing crisis. Have you started thinking about some of the policies around how we supply adequate housing for all these new people showing up to North Carolina?
Absolutely. That's been on our radar since before we got in office, and it's on our radar now. I've been able to connect with many people who are experts in housing, and not just housing, but also the critical issue of affordable housing. Now, let me explain myself when I say affordable housing. On the right, when we say affordable housing, we mean single family homes and apartments that are safe and affordable to those entry level workers, students, and others who are coming into new communities. That's what we mean when we say affordable housing. What they mean on the left basically is where are we going to put the poor people? So when we talk about all those issues, we understand that broad spectrum when you say affordable housing. But affordable housing is one of the underpinnings of building up these new communities. We need to make sure that when folks are coming to these new areas, that we have housing available to them. And we are connected now with people who are experts in those areas, because here it is. I work in government now, and I see very few experts in government in building economies or building homes or building corporations creating jobs. The experts on those things are the people out there on the ground who are actually doing them. The citizens out there that own the corporation, own the businesses, build the homes. Those are the people we need to partner with to make sure that we are crafting policy that is going to make it available for them to be able to make those affordable homes. And so that's going to be our position moving forward. We're going to find people who are the experts, people who are on the ground that understand the ins and outs of building homes and making them affordable. And we're going to do everything that we can do to get government out of the way so that those folks can be successful and that people of North Carolina can have the housing that they need.
You know, Lieutenant Governor, I tell you, the word affordable, for whatever reason, comes attached with some kind of stigma. You know, I grew up in affordable housing. I'm very familiar with how Section 8 works. But I tell you, you know, those types of programs can be a real kind of bridge that allows people like, you know, people like me and a lot of others that come up in underserved communities that, you know, creates a bridge for us to be able to get out of those communities. We don't want them to become a crutch. But we certainly think they can be a bridge. But I like the phrase workforce housing. That's something that I've sort of coined the last several years. A lot of hardworking folks need adequate housing, which means it has to be safe and affordable. And we need more workforce housing to be able to do so. And I'm glad to see that's on your radar, because if not, I think what could really happen is, despite the fact we have all these big job announcements happening in the central part of the state here in North Carolina, a lot of what could happen is the people that are actually working in those jobs could be living in Danville and Martinsville and contributing to the Virginia economy, not the North Carolina economy.
That's right. We cannot allow that to happen. We need to make sure that we're allowing people the opportunity to have the American dream right here, to own that home right here. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens.
You know, Lieutenant Governor, as I sort of start moving towards closing, a more national issue, and you've been very outspoken about large national issues. I mean, you obviously have shared how convicted you are, especially socially, when it comes to some big issues. Here in the past several days, believe it or not, we got a leaked opinion from the Supreme Court that it looks like the Supreme Court justices could be weighing the idea of overturning Roe v. Wade. Before we even get into the issue itself, I just want to say to my audience that this is a travesty when you have a leaked opinion from the Supreme Court. Now, keep in mind that, you know, our United States Capitol building was under attack here just basically over a year ago. And now it appears that the United States Supreme Court is under attack as well. And I think that's a travesty when you have that kind of pressure that can be placed on justices. But the opinion itself indicates that maybe there may be a majority opinion to overturn Roe v. Wade, which would place the decision back in the state's purview to decide whether or not they're going to allow for abortion and, you know, on an individual state basis. Lieutenant Governor, you're indicating that you may be wanting to be governor of the state of North Carolina. You could be dealing with this issue if you're governor of the state of North Carolina. Do you think that here in North Carolina, it's time to ban abortion?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's time to ban abortion, but we're certainly going to have a healthy conversation about protecting the lives of the unborn. You know, I always try to temper my opinions with the needs of the people of this state and the beliefs of others in this state. Those who know me know that I'm 100% pro-life. I don't ever agree with an abortion. But that is my personal opinion. But my personal opinion stops at the rights of others and sometimes stops at the opinions of others. So we're going to have that healthy conversation about if we have that healthy conversation about it. I'm going to do everything that I can do to make sure that the folks in this country know that North Carolina is going to be one of the most pro-life states in the nation. We're going to protect life at all costs. Now, what is that going to look like? I do not know, because we have not had the conversation. I've seen many things done in the governor's mansion. And one of the most egregious things that I've seen is the governor that we currently have behave like a king. If God would bless me to be able to be the governor of this great state, I promise myself and I promise the people of North Carolina, I will never behave like that. When we talk about that crucial issue of abortion, we're going to invite all voices to the table. We're going to listen to all voices. We're going to take all voices into consideration. But again, we're going to do everything that we can within our purview to fight to make sure that North Carolina is a strong pro-life state.
And you know, Lieutenant Governor, I totally agree with that. And I mean, you're someone that certainly has built a large following and base with a lot of our religious conservatives in the Republican Party. I mean, if this debate emerges here in North Carolina, are you prepared to expend that political capital to really get in there and work with the legislature to figure out the best solution for all North Carolinians?
Absolutely. This is a crucial issue, and we're really going to have to get together and put our heads together to make sure we do the best for the people of North Carolina who are living now and for the people who are going to be coming in the future in the wounds of North Carolina. So we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we fight for the unborn.
Well, Lieutenant Governor, as always, man, I appreciate you making time. I know you're busy. You got a lot of people tugging at you down at Raleigh. You're trying to keep them straight down there, I know. And so I appreciate you just making time to jump back on and lock back in with me. You're always welcome here to come here and share whatever's going on and down in Raleigh, anything that our audience needs to know. But really, really appreciate you being here. To my audience, really, really appreciate you locking in. The other voice that you've heard is our North Carolina Lieutenant Governor, Mark Robinson. He's locked in and gave his opinion on a number of things. The U.S. Senate race, as well as some different policy initiatives here in North Carolina. And then also the Roe v. Wade debate that was really heating up nationally that could have really big, large implications in every state across the country. Lieutenant Governor, before I let you go, anything you just want to share with the audience, any closing remarks, anything that we didn't touch on?
No, just so far in our tenure, we've had a wonderful time serving the people of North Carolina, and we hope to be able to continue to serve them in the future.
Well, to my audience, go follow Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. He's on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. He's very outspoken. So go check him out. You'll definitely learn more about his thoughts and opinions there. Also, make sure you stay locked in to WTOB because that's every Sunday morning. That's where the Locked In Show broadcasts at 7:30 a.m. But if you happen to miss it there, you can always go to Apple, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast. You can also lock in with me there. And be sure to follow Algernon Cash on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WCG. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. The views and opinions in this podcast are solely those of the contributors and are not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.